Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. My name is Jason Diakite, and as always, I'm here with my dear brother and co-host, Chef Marcus Samuelson. You're listening to This Moment, the transatlantic bridge connecting Stockholm, Sweden to Harlem, USA. And to kick things off in this brand spanking 2021, we have a very special interview. One that we did recently with the mega talented, award-winning Gambian and Swedish artist extraordinaire Saina Bosi. She's got tons of classic songs like Younger, Hard Time, Remember, Good in You. I could go on forever, guys. Long story short, Saina Bosi's a hit maker, visionary, and she's a pioneer. She also has this beautiful energy that I just know you're going to feel in just a short moment, and she's a good friend of mine. As artists, we're both working on pushing the envelope of what being a Black artist in Sweden today means and of inspiring people of the diaspora, not only in Sweden, but in the entire Nordics. Join us as we chat with her about Gambian culture and influence, about music, what she's cooking, and just her creative approach and a lot of music in 3, 2, 1. This moment. Welcome to This Moment, Saina Bosi.
Thank you. Wow. That was the greatest introduction of all time. Thank you. What an honor. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming out.
Of course.
We're excited. Can you tell?
The energy is great.
Yes. We're excited. So how has 2020 been for you? Like, how's it been?
It's been weird, but also wonderful. I think I'm one of those like very lucky people that haven't had my life too affected, because I was supposed to be in a studio anyways, and we're like three people in a studio all the time, so it's not a problem really. Yeah. But it's weird, of course, and I think it's starting to get really weird right now.
Yeah.
Right now, because everyone was like living off of the hope of maybe this will end sometime mm-hmm. this year, but it won't. So
the second wave came back.
Oh,
and
geez,
yeah.
It's strong.
Do you think it impacted your writing? Like, was it too early to that the pandemic has impacted your writing or not?
No, not that much. I think one of the things I've done this year, and I decided that long time ago, is to let a lot of other people write for me. So I haven't been writing that much. I've been focusing more on maybe melodies and productions and just bringing back a vibe and a new vibe. I'm kind of trying to reinvent myself without getting too far off, you know? So that's
where
what
I've been
doing.
Where are you going? What do you mean? Where are you going?
No, but not like in I didn't
still
like
though,
myself
still
before.
Still
but same emotion is coming back. No, but I just started working with new people, which is wonderful. And we've been trying to find a great kind of vibe and something that, like, I think I love experimental music all the time. I just want to hear something I feel like I haven't heard.
So what are you channeling right now? What are you?
R&B.
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 Like,
yes.
Are we talking SWV? Are we talking?
Yes, a little bit of it, but more so maybe Lauryn Hill and that kind of vibe, and the way of singing that taught me how to sing, just to bring back the influences I had when I was younger, when I'd listen to like Jill Scott and Lauryn Hill and Destiny's Child all day and try to just mimic them. And I think I've lost a little bit of that sometimes in my music, so I'm just trying to bring it back.
Do you remember the moment? Like the moment when you decided that you wanted to become an artist?
Oh, wow. No, but I remember being very young, kind of like daydreaming in music videos when I was maybe like 7, 8, 9, something like that.
But your father was a musician in Gambia, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you really had music in your life at early age. What type of music did your father perform and sing professionally?
He performed balakh most of the time. Mm-hmm. Balakh with kind of a Western touch, because the songwriting, I think, kind of was a little bit more influenced by, like, they love James Brown, I know. Mm-hmm.
And for
like
our audience, for those who haven't been to the Senegambia, the Senegal or Gambia, the Wolof-speaking, the main Wolof-speaking countries that don't know what Mbalakh is.
Yeah.
Tell us about Mbalakh.
What is that? It's a West African kind of cultural music, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe if you've heard Youssou N'Dour.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest Mbalakh artist, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I remember going to Youssou N'Dour's club in Dakar,
And you know, and Yusuf Ndour is playing, and it's like, bah, bah, bah,
that
it's
band like up is tempo. Crazy. Da, da,
da, da. And he had like, all he had time. Three percussionists and three
rhythm,
three talking drummers.
Yeah,
crazy.
So
it,
like the drum beats are there. It's really up tempo, and yeah. people are doing this really. They're dancing to the double tempo.
Yeah. Oh, that's
and
what
they're
just doing,
like,
right?
So everybody's dancing like super slow to this super fast music, yeah. and it's just the energy is just. It's the energy of the drum.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, my dad was a drummer, so I listened to that and reggae music basically all my
One of the blessings you learn when you're an adopted kid is like, I was cooking in Dakar, and we also went to, we actually went to a concert as well. And what you learn as an adopted Swedish Ethiopian kid is like, certain things know your lane. When they do the slow dance with a double move, know your lane. Don't bust out.
Don't try.
Don't bust out.
No, I don't try either.
I don't try either. I'm like, scared.
That is a completely different level. And also with Yusuf, and it's spiritual because the voices that he adds to it, right? Mm. It's like screaming from the top of the...
It is.
Coming from the water all the way into the to the beach or something like that. It is like a spiritual experience to watch him live, you know.
My dad
told me one thing about that vocal thing that they do something apparently that's called in Wolof is touch bat. It means like breaking your voice, so they sing underwater to kind of do something with their vocals. And sometimes they like dig holes in the sand and scream down in the sand, he told me.
Wait a minute, is this the secret is this how you got that amazing voice that you have?
Nah, this is genetics. He did all of that. I would like to try it because I just think, I mean, to me, CeeLo Green, if you've heard it, he kind
of
has the same voice. Like, it's a very interesting way of
saying
it. Crazy.
It's channeling
something,
you know, ancestry, legacy, spirits, pain, but also joy.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One thing that I love about your music is it's universal.
Thank you.
It's like
deeply human.
Boom.
Thank you.
You don't even have to. You could go and say, yeah, she was raised in Sweden. You could if you needed to. But also, it's universal.
Thank you so much.
And on my playlist, your music is squeezed in somewhere between Angie. Your aunties are Angie, Jill.
Yay.
And this, I mean, Lauryn Hill is a completely different subject for me, but you're right in there by the
Thank
queen.
Thank you. So. Wow, that's crazy. Thank you.
And Nina Simone, you know.
I love all of them, of course. And I think just like being in these kind of different environments, I've had to navigate and understand people in a different way. And it makes for like a good subject when you write a song to actually understand the root of the problem, I think. So I think my like dual heritage has really given me a lot when it comes to writing songs.
That is the source for all three of us, I think, in this room, because having this multiple heritages, multiple identities, you know, that in-between space that we all have, that's such a deep source of storytelling and emotion. And because I was going to say, there's something about the, you say Swedopians, but the Swegambians.
Yeah.
You know, because people of Gambian heritage are so, there's so much like Swedish Gambian excellence in Sweden, especially in music,
nice.
You know.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
But it's also, I feel like it's about choices. And the three of us as black people, we took our privilege and used it in a different way, right? You command the English language better than anyone, but you choose to speak, do your art in Swedish, for example. Mm. I remember the day when I was thinking about, should I go to Stockholm, coming from Gothenburg, not coming from Stockholm, which we three share that in a way, right?
Yeah. That's a big thing.
And I remember the days when I was like, should I go and try to make it in Stockholm? And I was like, literally like, I can model God in the world.
Yeah.
Because that choice of being, hey, why not just try it? And even with your music, for me, this is not like, you didn't try to go some Swedish linear path. You're like, no, this is for real. Like, this is real R&B for real.
It's just, you know, it just comes naturally. And I think it's maybe being able to choose that. I think everyone has the capacity to kind of find music within them. Mm. But I feel like that space in between is also, you know, a lot of times it gets really lonely there. But my dad kind of made sure from a young age to tell me that that's the special gift. Like, that's what you have that people don't have. You have to find something positive with it and understand that that's like the superpower.
And to me, in your, and I like the superpower thing because, you know, growing up, being who we were in this country, at least I, from a young age, kind of internalized the impression that it was an obstacle, something I had to overcome or mask or camouflage or hide, you know, or be ashamed of, but have then come to grow to feel that, wow, this is my infinite source. This is my superpower. This is my energy that I could channel. But taking it back, because your first EP was called For Maudu.
Yes.
For your dad. Mm-hmm. And somehow between the lines in your art and in your person, I really get the sense that you deeply miss your dad.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I think I missed him when he was here too. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always missed him. I've always loved being around him. And I think a great thing about Gambian culture that sometimes can go sideways, but is that you're required to sit down and listen. You're not the center of attention, you know what I mean? As a kid, like, you get to. So I always got to, like, be with him and sit and listen. I think that gave me so much. And there's a lot of wisdom that he just spoke all the time that I kind of took to heart. And more so, like, the main thing being him always telling me that you already know the answer, like, you know what the answer to your problem is. And I think that's just a great teacher. I'm very grateful for that.
Where did your voice is so powerful. Where did you realize I have this, I can flex, I have a voice that is very unique and different and clear? When were you a teenager? Were you in your early 20s? Like, when did that really
I was probably a teenager, but I think my voice has always been something that I've had but not thought so much about. I do it because I think it's fun, and all of those years when I kind of did it all the time to become better was just for fun. I just loved singing, and my mom kind of understood that I was good at it and put me in some schools, and I realized that people were happy when I sang, and that was kind of my way of just contributing to people's happiness. So
do you find yourself sometimes at the point where what you did once just for the joy of it has become too much of a job?
And absolutely.
How do you overcome that?
I hate, for example, making demos and then trying to sing them again the exact way, because for me, singing is a very one-take thing. It's a freestyle. And I'm not going to say that I'm ever going to be able to do the same thing twice, because I really can't. Like, I don't enjoy that at all. It's just, it has to be, because I've been analyzing a lot, but what I analyze is lyrics, I analyze sounds and structures, but not the singing part. It has to feel good, otherwise I don't, that's the only thing I have.
Just as I thought that it was time to say goodbye, I see you in the corner of mine, smiling like you never say goodbye. Your gaze and I'm not shy. Words escape me as you pass on by.
So take us back to Halmstad. So you're from, I'd say, a mid-size Swedish town on the Swedish west coast. But you decide at a young age to actually take the step and move to Stockholm.
Yeah, and you were the reason. Like, basically,
I was just fishing out this. I already knew this. I I just want to establish that, all right?
No, but everyone has to understand. Like, Jason was the only person that looked like, yes, where's the sound? Great. For sure. No, but I'd never seen people be artists from Sweden and that looked like me. You were the only one. And a big influence, and I was just obsessed. I know all your lyrics. But I listened also to your radio program that you had. That was Petri Hip Hop.
You know the most common word on that radio show, by the way?
What?
Fit.
Fit. Fit.
Fit.
You kind of came in and ruined the Swedish language. For all you listeners who don't know or are too young or in other countries, I had a show on Swedish national radio for a good 10 years called P3 Hip Hop.
Wonderful.
And it was the only nationally syndicated hip hop radio show. But anyway, so you decide, how old were you when you moved to Stockholm?
15, because I heard you talk 15. About a hip hop gymnasium. Mm-hmm. And what's that in English? Gymnasium?
Yeah, high school.
Yeah. You know, like LaGuardia in New York would be something like that.
And I had plans. I was like, I'm going to go do this super like study thing extra hard and become a lawyer, whatever I thought. And then I heard that and I said, I'm going to apply just to see if I can get in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I went there and I was just blown away by the school. Oh, and because I emailed you and I was like, what was that school you were talking about? And you answered.
Beautiful.
And I can see the email, like the print screen of the email still, because it was so important. Thank you.
But think about that story. For me, I just want to distill that story because we need, as creatives, to see people that look like us. That it's possible. And it's like, it doesn't matter what era, what field. We just need to see. I remember one time I was searching, you know, just becoming a chef. I bought a cookbook because there was a guy who had long hair. Mm-hmm. Because he just broke the mold of these traditional French chefs, how they looked like. Mm-hmm. He smoked and he had long hair. Still a white guy. And he's an amazing chef, Marco Piero White. But I was like, you can have long hair and be a chef. Wow, there's going to be room for me at some point. You know what I mean? So other, and that the fact also that you got back to saying that's also a big deal.
Absolutely.
I will be honest and say I didn't answer all my, I still don't answer all my fan mail, but I'm happy I answered that one.
Thank you.
I'm very happy I answered that.
But can I hear the favor coming back though? I hear the favor coming back because here's where we're dropping it. No pressure. But this is a studio and guess what? Jason is working on his album.
Oh, I know.
And you're working on your album.
Oh,
so
we've talked.
Oh, no. We meet. Sainable played me a few of her tracks. I played a few of my tracks and you know I'm you know
it's
once
so
the
wonderful
world once you share the stuff you're working on now with the world, it's next level.
I
know you're gonna just
tried.
and saying all that, you know, taking it back to, like, we mentioned Lauren and Angie and Jill and all the American, like, what did, like, when Burner Boy came into your life, what happened then?
But my thing with Afrobeat is also that I didn't like it at all for a long time until he made some really good songs. Then I started to listen. And I just think he's wonderful. And the music is, of course, great. But just the energy that he comes with, the kind
absolutely.
Of, I'm not taking any bullshit. Don't ask me no dumb questions. I love that. It's just that Fela Kuti kind of fire.
I mean, not taking anything away from Nigeria, but kind of what Drake does when he starts including Nigerian artists, like featuring them on track. Like opening the world's kind of ears and eyes to something that's been there and been a force in its
forever.
Own right, but all of a sudden then a visibility for you know, African music in this pop culture that we're in, you know, even though they were probably fine with having, you know, what I mean, there's been several big groups in Nigeria and Ghana and Senegal.
Absolutely.
You know, they have their own scenes, but brought out on a world stage.
I think it's so important because we can't always see everything from Africa as like world music.
Exactly.
It's pop
right?
culture. Yeah. It's been and is always going to be the root of everything. So it's about time.
But also this moment, right? This is also hip hop is there. The medium for social media, you know, Africa's a very young culture and old at the same time, right? You know, the continent, maybe the average age is like 27, 28. So, you know, it's not the same gatekeepers, you know, they do it on their phones and they push it out. So I think it's an incredible time to discover music.
Yeah, you know? And next step must be, I mean, definitely fashion is already happening, right? Like, I mean, I can feel kind of like when I'm on the streets of Johannesburg or Cape Town, that's basically where the flyest new fashion is found. But the next step where I really feel like the continent of Africa isn't getting its propers is food.
Yeah, it's about to change.
I mean, African restaurants are considered that you call them African restaurants, and also they're like, ooh, something super exotic with banana and peanuts.
But it's honestly just like all great African culture, it doesn't exist on a linear path. Some of the most exciting food in the continent is road food, is street food, right? Mm. If you eat in Nigeria, first of all, I've been to Nigeria, cooked in Nigeria many times. I never eat in restaurants. Mm. The food starts at night. You know, it starts with Afrobeats. We go and have suya late at night. You know, people pull up with their cars. And then you eat suya. You know, suya is this skewer dish that comes from the Hausa people up north by the border of Niger. And you grill the meat. Then you put this peanut sauce on top. And that's kind of, it's its own thing. It's like you live in, right? Because it's not just the fact that you're eating it. Mm. The scene, the dress scene, the style, the food, the music, all of it. And it starts maybe like 1 a.m. And, you know, now for the first time, I actually talk about it in the book, The Rice. I talk about, for the first time now, American chefs, most of them African-American chefs, are going back to Africa to study. Because, A, they know that that's the birthplace of a lot of food items, but also there is a whole other remix version there of its food, similar to Afrobeat. Mm. So a lot of my great friends in the States are going back to, J.J. Johnson did it, Edward Jordan did it, and we have our chef friend Michael that's been on our show, actually, that navigates, telling them where to go. So it's a vibrant food scene, not necessarily in restaurants.
No.
This moment.
One of the things that comes from the same West Coast as a chef, I have to bring it up. This is the thing that Nigerians.
Where are we going? Because I think Nigerians I agree.
Try to take.
They don't understand.
But it's not theirs. Uh-uh. It's actually from Senegal and Gambia.
It's Belachin jollof rice.
No, wolof rice. It is one of the biggest gifts because for me, it's the burst of, if you think about what we know here, more as paella, for example. If you think about a jambalaya from New Orleans.
Risotto.
It's a different
that's
rice.
Something else? Okay.
Because the wolof rice really starts with broken rice, which is a shorter grain rice. And, you know, I was just like, when you were coming into that, I was like, I wonder if she makes a mean wolof rice.
You know what? I've done it once and I was all right. But thing is, I don't eat meat anymore. So to me, like the flavor of that rice kind of, it kind of doesn't go the same way. But it's my favorite food, like Benachin. Yeah. And thank you for bringing this up because I'm provoked by this is the jollof, whatever. It's not as good. Thank you.
Because I hadn't made that connection before. Oh. I mean, I know that in Ghana, in Nigeria, they call it jollof rice.
Yeah, but they separate the
rice. I didn't know
that
jollof rice, the name of it, does it come from being wolof rice?
The wolof people, and it's nothing to do with Nigeria. Like, Nigeria is a big country, and anything good.
Go easy now. There might be Nigerians coming on the show soon.
Suya, they can have. Like, it's like one of these things, like, actually, let's be specific. It comes from Senegal and Gambia.
It does.
And it is like, you know, when you come into Dakar, for example, the dried, what makes that rice is really this dried shrimp paste that is very funky. It's a fermentation process that it's overwhelming, but it's also what makes that umami, that makes that dish so good. So I was like thinking about.
Yeah, they have like netitu, that's from some tree.
Yeah.
That's called, it's like gum something that they put in it that gives it that. It's really, really special.
But have you been cooking through the pandemic? Like, Jason is the master chef.
He went in on a two and coming out on an eight.
Sainabo and I, we've had like an ongoing conversation of like, we should cook dinner together. And it still hasn't happened yet. I know it's going to happen, but checking you out on Instagram, I see you going to the special, to the Indian store, buying your,
okras and things.
Exactly. Yeah. Buying your fresh okra. So tell us about what is cooking meant to you, especially now, this year?
I love cooking. I've actually lived in an apartment without a kitchen for 3 years. And that was a very weird thing for me to do. I think I was on tour.
It's like
before.
Being in a hotel room.
That's what it is, because I was on tour. I was very stressed out, and I bought that apartment, and they were like, you buy it, but you have to build the kitchen. Yeah. I didn't do that because I was just stressed, and I'm realizing now when I have a kitchen, that this is my therapy. Like, I love cooking so much. Mm. It's the only place where I can relax and just, like, be inventive and do things. And also, I was in Gambia last year, and I started to recreate all of the Gambian dishes, but veganize them. Mm-hmm. And it went really well. It tastes so nice. And it,
so that's
it's
your
really
challenge.
Easy. Yeah.
Like, benachin, like, perfecting the vegan benachin.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, where do you get your... Maybe you get your umami from, like, fermented mushrooms.
Mushrooms, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Some fermented maybe like
or funky
seaweed,
mushroom.
I don't know. Yeah,
seaweed?
I'll try something. Mm-hmm. Mm. But I had an idea. Seaweed, I'd definitely. Like to have a cooking show and just, like, go to all different Gambian or, like, African countries with all my friends from different places.
Nice.
And try to cook and eat something.
Is there a spot?
That's my dream.
Up, sign
like,
us up.
Yeah,
is there
welcome.
A spot in Stockholm where you can go to get, like, bisap?
No, that oh
where
to
you
buy
make the beef
it
up from or where you get the because I know like for example the Gambian and Senegalese like hot sauce the chili sauce is like very I mean this is not taking anything away from any of the other West African chilies they're
don't
also
start.
Very very powerful but it is you know
life.
it's
yeah,
hot as hell
it's very
so. Do you have a spot in Stockholm where you go to like purchase
to buy
the stuff you need?
I'm thinking about it right now because bisap like that. Green, I don't even know what that is in English, but
is
I don't know where to buy that.
Right?
Hibiscus leaves, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know where I can get that. If anyone knows, let me know. I just found okra the other day and I was super happy.
But but I have to ask you because I was like, I was thinking about when did your father, your family, when did your father come to Sweden? Because one of the things that my mom did was like, anytime, you know, we saw a black man in Gothenburg when I was growing up. My mom stopped the car, pulled the kids out of the car. We had to go up and say hi to them. And
oh,
it
wow.
was equally, you know, the guy was just, he was maybe like 22, 23. I was like, hi, ma'am, so nice. And we were like the little kids. And
throw
my mom
these
was
kids
like,
on me?
There's not a lot of black people where we live. We need to meet. So it was like
that
any guy.
Point.
And
yeah.
I was like, so I think I met your dad
you
when
might
he was
have.
Chilling in G-Berg. You know, I was just envisioning him like Kekke's father or something, like our friend Kekke's father like that. Because I met all these anonymous men through my mom. They're just like, hold the car aside. The kids need to have black influences. So I apologize for my mom ahead of time. But like, tell us about his journey and all of that.
So my dad came here, I think it was in the 80s, early 80s. Mm. He was in a band called Ifam Bundi. I'm very bad at pronouncing that. I'm sorry. But they were one of the first like West African groups that kind of brought in influences
nice.
From Western music. So they kind of mixed Mbalahu with James Brown and other kind of funky like soul things. So he came here to play. He was a drummer in that band. And then he met my big sister's mom and he stayed. So that's how he came here. And then he kind of sadly stopped making music. He tried. It was like an ongoing, I'm going to do it. He played a couple of shows. But it's difficult with that kind of music here, I guess. Mm. And like
so
all
he,
the, all
he
of the
left
other
the
things.
Band and decided to stay
here. Yeah. And then we later on, when I was how old was I, like 5, 6 or something, we went to live in Gambia again. And then he kind of restarted his musical
and
music
how was
career.
That experience? Like, how was that?
It was great. Like, I think about it a lot as the years. I think we went when I was 4, came back to Sweden when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it really formed me. Like, it really cemented, like, deeply who I am. Mm. And I'd never, even though there's a lot of weird things and it's very different and all of that, but I'd never change it. And I'd probably
beautiful.
Do the same with my kids
because
if I could.
Because something I just feel it with you, you know, in your art and just in your person that, you know, I myself have a black parent and a white parent and I have so many friends who have that same makeup and it's different how close you are to your one parent's country. And it really feels like, well, you know, obviously you live in Sweden, so you're close to Sweden. Sweden is a part of your heart, but also a part of your heart really is in Gambia.
Definitely. And I think I made it a mission when I was younger to really think about that kind of thing for all the people like me, but that haven't had the connection or been able to like have the culture open up for you in that way because it's scary and it's weird and it's if you don't have a parent to kind of see you through that and I was kind of more like chucked in and left there
it,
but
right?
introduce you and have you kind of understand things instead of like shaming you for not understanding things. So I'm totally like, if you want to go to Gambia, come with me, let's go.
Because there's that, you know, a lot of people I've met during the course of my life here in Sweden with a black parent have that disconnect to their African heritage
it's
and
hard.
Their African culture. And and at the same time growing up in Sweden and being othered constantly, or being seen as, even though, you know, you're born here, this is the only language you speak apart from English, you're not one of us.
Yeah.
If you don't have that connection to your heritage or to a part of your heritage, in a sense, a part of you will be lost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think just because I started school there, I learned the language. So those couple of years were really important, because if you at least understand, I'm not very good at talking it, but I understand what they say. So that's a way in, and just understanding a lot about the culture. And so I can choose, like, a lot of things still are weird to me and disturb me a little bit. But just feeling like I can be myself here. And also later on in life, really understanding and feeling like you need me to be myself here. Because like, they need that as well as we're needed here. We're different because we're from two different places.
I've been thinking about tomorrow instead of drowning in the past. We had good times even back when dreams were all we had to last.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jason gave you the nicest compliment before we came here today. Like, we were talking about your favorite songs, and my favorite is Still. And Jason was like, I did a whole album trying to tell something. She did one song and told a story in one song. What's up with that?
Hard times.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, no. In 2014, I recorded a whole album. It there had been an election in Sweden. The party whose name we don't mention on this podcast.
What party? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. But it was a party, not a party any one of us are invited to. But anyway, they had just gained a lot of momentum, and I was really frustrated about this growing racism and the normalization of racism that then, unfortunately, since then has accelerated. But and so all of that leaked into this album that I recorded. And so
out of the spring,
out of the 10, 12 tracks, well, the election had been, the election was coming up, you know. But I released it slightly before the election, but I was already mad. And I was frustrated because all this anger was leaking into the music. And then you dropped Hard Times. And I was just like, wow. Without mentioning, you know, without specifically mentioning things, and with, you know, just like the way Bob Marley did it, you know, with a lot of air between the words, a lot of air between the lines, you know, you just captured my whole everything, you know, and at the same time managed to be, it was both like anger, pain, but also hope and strength.
Yes.
Wow,
and that
you.
To me is mastery and genius, you know.
And no, I would say the same thing with Still, because it's such a pretty song. You know, there's a couple of pretty songs that you always just think about. I always think about Human Nature as such a pretty
song. I love that song. And it's true. It is very pretty.
So,
pretty is a good word for that.
Oh, my God. It's so delicate. But when I hear Still, oh, my God. It is like perfection.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You need to check out a track called You that Sayin' About did. That's just like it. Seriously, seeing you do that live, it you know.
That's my favorite song to sing live.
It brings tears to my eyes every time.
No, but talk to me. What is it?
Well, it's, you know, it's like when cooking is just like two ingredients. Boom.
No, you guys are too nice. Thank you.
Yes.
You know?
Cause I need you so, I need you so, I need you so I will stay. Yes, I will be standing right where you live.
We want to know about the new album. Yeah. So, Boyka, Boyka, no pressure, no pressure, no pressure. Palm oil in that. We got the palm already. So we got the palm already.
It's vegan. It's definitely vegan.
We got the seaweed. So what's the new songs about?
The songs, I mean, I think I've always come from quite a negative space. Not that's a bad way of describing it, but I've been sad about things, mm-hmm. and I've wrote songs about problems, like a lot of us do all the time. And I feel like I'm growing into myself a little bit more. I'm not as sad anymore. I changed a lot of things that made me sad, and it's working out. I've got a kitchen. Like I have wonderful people around me.
So I'm
happier. I am actually in love. I have a boyfriend, ladies and gentlemen. Never thought.
Yeah, but that's a game. That's
no,
like
it's crazy to me. Yeah. Thank you. So it's different. A lot of things are different. And I'm also...
Whoa. Slow it down. So... Where did you guys meet? Like, how did, like, I want to know. What makes him special? Tell me.
He's just wonderfully kind.
Nice.
And an amazing singer, which is crazy to me.
Oh, beautiful.
Because we can, like, stand at home doing the dishes singing, which was my secret dream for a boyfriend that I never thought would ever happen. Wow.
And that's a hard one to, you know, to find in Sweden, I'll be honest.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So you waited for a reason.
Yeah, I did, because I didn't think so before, but I realized I did. So my songs aren't about like depressing love anymore, and I might write a few just because, but it's not a feeling I have. And so I have a lot of friends writing songs for me, and they're a lot about just life, just the same kind of emotion, but words that aren't as maybe universally like it's not as serious, but it's still beautiful. So that's what I'm trying to find. I'm trying to find that playfulness in the music that I loved with like Destiny's Child, where the wording is different from maybe the way I've written songs. But I'm just excited. It's lighter, it's happier, it's fun. And the chords are beautiful.
Which is so, it's so
you can nod your head to it.
It's so paradoxical though, right? In this 2020, right? This kind
that's
of
beautiful.
Vacuous year, like bereft of all the usual joys that we have in life. That's when you're finding this.
But that's when we have to work. We have to find positivity. I really feel that way. Like this is, it's therapy. So instead of kind of digging myself into the darkness, I'm trying to like, my first thought with creating this album was I wanted to create a space where black girls could have fun and everything was perfect. I just wanted a paradise in my mind. You know?
Let me say this. Okay, so for all our non-Swedish listeners, the most like the radio show with the biggest listener or with the biggest audience each year is during the summer months in Sweden. A famous or important Swedish person gets 90 minutes to speak. All three of us have done it. It's called the Summer Talkers, Sommarpratarna. And, you know, you did something in your summer program that really just struck a chord in my heart, which was you turned, you know, you have like 1.5 or 2 million people listening to this radio show. Everybody's finding out who you are, your life story, and you're playing your like songs that have meant things to you. But then towards the end, I think it was of the show, you spoke directly to a little black girl somewhere in Sweden, somewhere you didn't know, and telling her what to do with her hair.
Wow. Yeah.
That was so powerful to me. Just...
Thank you so much.
Seeing that, you know, the lostness we spoke about before, that we've all, even though we had parents, have experienced at some time or another, but that somebody might be experiencing even more. And just something, you know, simple, like what to do with your hair.
I made that show with my sister, Ami Bramasi. She was the producer for it. And I think always...
Sweden's number one podcaster, by the way. Yeah. Big up, boss.
True. No, but I just... always, I write songs for people, for myself, for people that look like me. And that's the only people I know. Like, so that's what I do. And I remember playing Way Out West, and this one kid came up to me that looked just like me when I was younger. I think she might have been like 12, 13, and she told me that she loved my music. And I get like chills to this day because those are the only things that, because we all
matters.
Know, like, the having everything you want and applauds and accolades and things, it's cliche, but it's true that doesn't mean anything in the end, the end of the day. So that was just, those memories are the things that stick to me. And I remember being so lost and having to look at MTV to find people that looked like me. So I just thought that would be a good thing to do, and really essentially everything I do is for like 13-year-old black
and knowing girls. That your hair can be beautiful.
You know, it's a struggle, but let's go.
No, that's great.
No, it's interesting with Sweden. It's so, I mean, you know, again, in comparison to the United States, where despite all the oppression and the bloodshed, there is a visible and vibrant black culture in the public spaces. I mean, it's unavoidable. Absolutely. It's the dominant culture almost.
Yeah.
Whereas in Sweden, that same African-American culture and black, you know, global culture is enjoyed, you know, and consumed happily in this country. But the visibility of black people and their culture in the public spaces is like, for me growing up, or for us growing up, was very limited.
But one thing that I appreciated about growing up in Sweden in terms of black culture was actually not just only having the United States. We had England and Africa as well. So, for example, having Sade, that was different. That was not American to me, right?
True.
Or Soul to Soul. That was different. Again, that's those two things couldn't almost be produced in America. So by having, and I do think with Afrobeat, there is, and UK rappers, there is a level where, of course, they listen to American hip hop, but they also listen to African music directly. And I think that is one of the beauties about being in Europe, is that we now have France that has strong African culture. We now have, of course, England, of course. But so blackness, you do get another pipeline that might not end up in America.
True.
And I really appreciate that. I do appreciate sort of this other blackness that comes via Africa. And West Africa is a huge part of giving us that via London, via Paris, via Brussels. And then it comes to Sweden, and then it's very different. Like, you know, Sade is probably one of the best examples. Like, that is not an American machine. You know, that's something else, you know?
Burna always also carries that torch today, I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And we have a Swedish connection with that also. I mean, if we have the Sherry family to think about that. Think about, you know, like, think about when, you know, Nina Buffalo Stans, and then, of course, Tatio and the whole family, Eagle Eye,
they're,
you know.
Such big inspirations.
But see, I can't really think of, you know, Sweden didn't really have a soul music. I mean, there was soul music in Sweden, but it wasn't real until you, not for me anyway, until you came along. So,
well, blackness was, I mean, you know, I think Tatio did a lot for her first album, you know, at Man in the Moon, and her very first stuff, and that whole blackness wave was an important part of putting down the flag for Swedish R&B. You know, got a rep for Gothenburg, Jennifer Brown started also, you know what I mean? There's levels to this shit, right?
What do you say?
To me, like, the most soulful person is Nene Cherry, because I've never seen what I do as soul music. I understand that it sounds like it, but just
it has soul.
It has soul,
even though it may not be. We don't have to categorize.
But I think we've had a lot of very genuine kind of emotive black music coming from here, but it hasn't been seen that way. And I think also, like, the way I sing a lot of times, just because I sing with sing in a certain way, that's like more you translate it to being soul music. But it's an honor for it to be soul music. I just mean that we've had a lot of very, very, like, Nene Cherry to me is a soul singer. Like, what's happening? Like,
she's the coolest person.
And her daughter is doing it now. Mabel is doing it now.
Yeah, the whole
you
family.
You should do a track with Nene.
That hasn't happened, but I've wrote it on my, I hope so. I just have to find like a perfect thing. But Nene told me one thing like 2 years ago when I was trying to finish my last album. I was just talking to her because I did an interview with her in England once, and she just said that.
Are you bragging?
Her dad, yes, I'm bragging.
She can brag.
No, but she told me that her dad had said, don't let them change you.
Yes.
And that's, she just said that to me. And I remembered that whole rest of the process, because it was difficult. To not like have all kinds of opinions seep into making the difficult album number two, and it really helped me. And I always think about like how life must have been for them, because they didn't have anyone before them.
But I feel like you're really claiming your space now with the, you know, the aesthetic, the presentation. I saw you, you know, I saw part of your live tour last, you know, 2019, pre-pandemic, when that kind of stuff was still happening. Just everything from what the band was wearing to what the band was sounding like, what the band looked like.
Very important.
So tell us about that, like reclaiming that kind of decision-making power.
It's just me realizing that majority of my friends were Black. My family was Black, and the people I worked with weren't Black. When I was creating music from like the depths of my soul, I wasn't being able to mirror myself in any Black people. I couldn't talk about certain things. And I just thought it was important to have equal parts Black people in my band, because also I had never saw that. I didn't even know about what Black musicians there were. So I had to kind of start with Emmanuel, my wonderful music director, and then we kind of put together a great band.
But it's like you also be understanding the space and you being an advocate and an activist at the same time. You know what I mean? Because you know you're going to have this tour and there's a certain amount of people that's going to work on that, and then you present yourself. So that's really, really
huge. Audiences are coming to see it, and that's doing something. Just the visual, then you don't even really have to say anything. Just that they see it.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's wonderful, and sometimes I get frustrated also, because everything I do kind of is seen to some extent as like an act of rebellion. Everything comes from a place of me being Black. I'm Black. I like it. That's nothing that I can change. So, of course, this is my life, and I sing about it. So I just thought it was important to have that be on stage, and people see that, and also bringing more women in to do things and just having fun.
Listen, I know I'm slow, so I'm a little bit like an AOL or Bing it here, but we forgot one guy and talk about Swedish R&B, because I felt like that was short. But I do think that Stephen Simmons did an incredible, and it was a young girl that was really popping. She was so talented. Awa did a great job too.
Awa Mane, I love. That was one of the people
from. She produced her own tracks.
Yeah. She did?
That's
I didn't know that.
That's what a lot of people don't know.
She was definitely one of the people.
Shout out to Awa and Stephen Simmons. And Stephen, you know, Stephen was in the studio with D'Angelo's producers and Prince producers.
He also gave me my first job as a singer.
Wow.
But he also fired me.
Oh!
I'm not allowed to.
I'm leaving it right there.
But wait, that's not, that should be like... Oh, there we go. Gunshot.
What happened? I want to know.
Okay, tell us. Tell us.
Nah, I don't know. I think I sucked probably. That was back in the day when I did a little bit. I didn't understand that when you come to rehearsals, you're supposed to know the music. Because I went to the music school, and when you go to rehearse, you learn the music.
Exactly.
So I came there scared to death and didn't understand anything. But I remember Mello, singer, wonderful, also soul singer.
Mello's
He has the smoothest voice. Mm-hmm. He was so kind to me and tried to help me. But like, to this day, I'm not very good at like... It sounds so cocky, but background vocals, because you have to be so extremely strict with the tones, and you can't have no flavor like that. So I wasn't very good at that job, but he did fire my ass.
Did you ever?
That was good.
Yeah,
that was good. That
always
he fired.
Good for me.
Because
yeah,
he
I
saw
to,
that you have to like
you need
go
to stand
on
your own legs.
You know.
And now you know.
Have you ever checked out 20 Feet from Stardom? That doc.
Yes, I did. Yes,
Lisa
I did. A long
Fisher
time ago. Wonderful.
Incredible. It's all the backup singers that, you know. They have the voice are incredible, right? Mm-hmm. So it's actually Whitney Houston's mom was always Sissy was always a backup singer, right? And then Lisa Fisher is probably the one that she was on all the Luther stuff and stuff like that. But it takes a certain character not to step forward. That was really
and some of the
and
best singers,
the
And really
you
harmonize.
No, I think about classical musicians. Like you're playing what third violin or something,
you have to collaborate.
And you have to be on fucking point with playing that violin. But you have to do exactly only what you're allowed to do. Nothing else. Mm. That's your job.
Wow.
Yeah. It's different than you know being
freestyling
like you are stepping into
in the
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's true.
Exactly.
No, it is.
Luther did a lot of. I mean, he had Lisa Fisher and Whitney's mom. On his backup singer with Nathan. He was backup for one of my favorite David Bowie songs called Young American. So this is very, you know, so R&B. And that's Luther in the back.
Really? I didn't know that.
Madonna was backup for Born to Be Alive with Patrick and Nana, one of the first disco pop hits. Madonna was backup for that.
I'll be honest, I used to love Madonna when I was a kid.
I can
Material Girl.
Great. Yeah.
Oh, it was dope. With what's his name? Jelly Bean, I think his
Jelly
name
Bean,
was Jelly
of course,
Bean that
Jelly
produced
Bean,
it.
Yeah.
It was like funky. To me, that was really pre-rap stuff.
But I think for me, like, I think a lot about who does my background vocals on records. And it's very precious, like, to hear another voice and to have that be consistent through an album.
Gives you
a texture.
Sarah, Kendra.
So we got...
Yeah, I've had so many wonderful singers.
So we got a choir here. Awa's coming back on the album. Steven is definitely doing the piano on the album.
You can fire
Jason,
his ass,
and
you know.
Jason.
You better play that piano right.
And Jason is coming in on the one lane here, too. Yeah. So we definitely got the choir right.
I ain't singing, though.
I want to sing with Awa Manesh. I think she's wonderful. Mm. I played a big show like 2 years ago or something like that, and I wanted to have her and Nene, and I can't remember who else I wanted to bring on, but I just think we don't get Pauline, right?
Mm. Pauline.
Yeah, I loved her.
Pauline from Small Lunch. Dope soul singer.
She has crazy voice. Dope. Like, yeah. Crazy.
I love that. I'm getting homework
Mape, yeah, Jackie was there. She did it. And I just think that we need to talk about them more, Swedish music history, because they really, they made some records when they sat at TV back in
but
the
it's
day.
Just like, you know, it's just like the effect of Obama having been president. We're starting to see now just that the millions of black and brown people around the world seeing, the young kids seeing that it's actually possible. Mm. And in 5, 10, 15 years, we're going to see the effect of that when they grew up. And it's like, I saw him do it, or I saw Kamala do it, so that's why I did it. I think you're having the same effect in music.
Absolutely.
And I mean,
literally.
But just like you had that legacy from other artists before you, you're also giving that to the, you know, young boys and girls around this country and in other countries too.
I hope so. Thank you.
And thank you for not, you know, it's such a ambitious, like it fits the world, right? Like, I love when something comes out of Sweden, but it's for everyone.
Yeah, the sound is definitely not, it's not small time, it's not limited.
No. Thank you. Yeah.
We're going places here. We're busy. Stay out of my lane.
Big sound.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Thank you for coming on this moment.
Thank you. I could sit here for 2 hours more.
That's
thank
what I was
guys.
About to say. We could definitely go another hour, but we'd love to have you back on the show.
Anytime. You know,
we're
going to
do it in the States next
one.
Yeah.
This moment is your home.
Hopefully, thank you.
Next time you're in Brooklyn playing Afro Punk, you come by, you know, you're always welcome back.
Thank you. This
is
wonderful.
Congratulations. We can't wait for the new album. And I'm invited to 2 release parties next year for Jason's album.
Definitely.
But also, the vegan Benashin. It will be expected in 2021.
Okay.
You know?
I'm going to try not to be scared to cook for you guys.
Crack the umami code.
I will. Definitely. Right. I'm going to lock it in.
Bless up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. More of that energy coming up. So beautiful to have Sainabo on the show, and hoping that she'll come on again soon. Next week, folks, is a huge deal. We have climate change environmentalist extraordinaire Al Gore, Mr. Vice President, joining us on this moment.
Both my parents were lawyers, and thrilling to have a chance to take part in American democracy at its best. I could hear the battle hymn of the Republic being hummed in the background when I had these town hall meetings.
So join us as we talk about his rise, climate change, and so much more. Stay tuned and have a beautiful week. Peace.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.